Hey everyone, this is Mike Whitfield with TurbulenceTraining.com, and this is this month's training call, and I'm really excited because we have Brad Pielon on the phone, and from what I hear, he's just a little bit chilly at this time of year, so excited to be hearing from about that.
I'm done with winter.
Brutal stuff, and I can't complain being in Georgia. I was just telling Brad here that it's 40 degrees, and I think that's cold, so I guess I don't have any room to talk. So we'll talk about intermittent fasting, some things that he's discovered with bodybuilding, as well as home gym setups and all that kind of stuff. So really cool info. Brad, welcome to the call.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
Very cool. We're excited about this. Well, for those that perhaps don't know about you, if you will, give us a little bit of a background of who you are and what you do.
Okay, yeah, so my name is Brad Pielon. I'm best known probably for my work in intermittent fasting and my book, Eat, Stop, Eat. It was kind of a labor of love back in 2006, and actually through our mutual friend Craig Ballantyne, my work in fasting ended up published online. It was my first true foray into sort of like having an online book. And the timing was perfect. You know, 06, 07 was just when people were getting really comfortable with buying books online. And so it all sort of serendipitously worked out for me. So ever since 06, 07, I've been online as an author, promoting and expanding the concepts behind Eat, Stop, Eat. From there, I've done other work. You know, my passion isn't as much fasting as it is sort of the human body and the way it looks and works. So I also did work on things like how much protein, just investigating really how much protein you need to eat to build muscle. And then I also went into working on things like the Adonis Index and the Venus Factor, which were workouts, but my curiosity wasn't on the workout part as much as the philosophy behind those products, which was much more based on the concept of thinking your way through changing your body by changing the ratios of the sizes of your body, the proportions of your body, as opposed to simply trying to go up or down in weight. So my labor of love has always been the body and how it looks, and it sort of manifests into intermittent fasting or how much protein you're supposed to eat or how to work out, just as ideas kind of pop up and spring into my head.
Fantastic. And, of course, we're going to talk about that, the intermittent fasting. I know it's been a great tool back when I trained one-on-one clients, of course, with my campers as well, because it's just so simple, and we'll get into the simplicity of it as well. But the first thing I want to talk about, what I'm really excited about, and I'm sure other trainers listening as well, is you being at the TT Summit this year. So we're really excited about that. And looking forward to having you. If you will, do you have any teaser content or anything that you might be talking about there?
Yeah, well, you know, I was talking back and forth with Craig, and I really wanted to get involved. But, you know, I do multiple interviews throughout the years on intermittent fasting, and I really think that the vast majority of my philosophies and my beliefs in that system and how to apply it, you can find online, right? It's kind of old news. Like, it's fun to go over it, but it wasn't really something that, you know, really piqued up my interest in terms of going and presenting again on the same subject. So I'm going to be presenting on what we talked about earlier, which is the concept of using proportions and ratios as a way to guide how you interact with your clients. So instead of just looking at their weight and your ability as a trainer to move a client's weight up or down, it's really identifying with what your client is asking you, right? They're asking you to help create an ideal self. They have a vision, an image in their head of what they want to look like, or I guess more accurately, how they want other people to see them, right? So they have this image, and it's not actually an image of, you know, the number is 128 on a scale, you know, in the case of a woman, and I don't know, 182 for a guy. It's not a weight. Their image in their head is of a body, or at least of the proportions of a body. So I think we do a disservice to our clients when then we take what they tell us, which is, I want to really change the way I look, I want to get in shape, etc., and we force them to then focus on the changes in the weight of their body. So what I'm going to be talking about is how to use proportions and ratios to help guide everything from exercise selection to program development, and how you can use that to really specifically hone in on what your clients are asking you. So, and I'm sure everybody involved in terminus training, especially if you train people, has run into a situation where, you know, you've got a client and you may have helped him or her gain 5 pounds of muscle, lose 5 pounds of fat, and you may have done it in a week. So you may have done some extraordinary things. But at the end of that week, your client's going to step on a scale, see no change at all, and start to question whether or not you even know what you're doing, right? So I want to move away from the weight mentality and just sort of explain how you could use proportions to not only better gauge the success of your training, but also as a way to have a much better understanding of what your client truly wants, right? If you can get them to start thinking in terms of proportions and what they want bigger and smaller, as opposed to a weight. I guess a perfect example is if you have a client who really idolizes Beyonce, right? And if you were to go to your client and say, well, look, you know, you've got two options here, right? I can help you weigh the exact same amount that Beyonce weighs, or I can help you have a body that looks exactly like Beyonce's body, but I can't do both. Which do you want? And it'd be very interesting to see what the client answers to that question, but also as a trainer, you know, how would you react to the different answers, right? What would you do to change things? So that's the approach I'm going to take, is the ratios and proportions approach to weight training and to program design.
Fantastic. That's it's very intriguing. And you're right. I've dealt with that before in the past where, you know, now I wasn't able to have them lose 5 pounds and gain 5 pounds of muscle in a week. I never got that good, I guess. But, you know, looking at it, on paper, if, you know, after 4 weeks, if I was able to, you know, take off 5 to 7 pounds of fat and then put on a few pounds of muscle, and they're on the scale, they're only seeing, you know, just say 2 pounds, then you're right. They're going to think, well, you know, I'm not really making any progress, whereas physiologically you have, and it's just amazing.
Yeah.
So that's going to be some great content. We really look forward to that. So
should
awesome
be
having you there. Cool. Very cool. Well, let's talk about intermittent fasting and as far as any new research that you've discovered as far as how it regards to inflammation. And, you know, how is there anything that you've discovered that's new that's, you know, that can help us as trainers help out with our clients?
Yeah, well new to me, I guess, the inflammation fasting link was something I started talking about a couple of years ago. And what's new to me is in my research is how your gut microbiota or your gut bacteria play into that. It seems that they're the one of the principal drivers of inflammation in the human body, and it's very interesting that they also react very acutely to the concept of fasting. So the principles behind what I've found or what I'm looking into right now is that the relationship between intermittent fasting and inflammation may be governed by intermittent fasting's effect on your gut microbiota. So very cool area. I'm still in the midst of learning and doing the background reading needed to kind of get up to speed in that area. But it's really intriguing. I think that gut microbiota is a very next big thing in weight loss and diet, if it's not already. But I think specifically, you know, where, again, something becomes big and everybody clamors around, what should I eat to change my gut bacteria, and I'm going to look at it from the opposite point of view, which is what should I not eat, you know, or what happens when I don't eat? What is the actual calorie load implications to gut bacteria? And that's kind of the direction I'm taking right now, but it does look promising that your gut bacteria does respond very acutely to periods of nutrient deprivation, which is what we'd call fasting. And this seems to be a beneficial effect if the fasting period is low enough, so we're not talking days and days and days of fasting, that seems to affect both the richness of your gut bacteria, or, you know, the amount and types of bacteria that are present, as well as the inflammatory qualities of the bacteria. So kind of a you know, same story, which is we know that there's beneficial effects of fasting on inflammation, but now we're kind of looking at it from a new angle, which is the fact that it might be the gut bacteria that's causing the effect.
Very cool stuff. Fantastic. And I'm sure we'll be learning more as you learn more as well.
Yep.
Now, the thing I want to talk about is the troubles or issues that people face when they start intermittent fasting, especially early on.
Yep.
And what I mean by that is say somebody just started intermittent fasting And then once they're done with their fast, they end up, you know, overdoing it. They overindulge. Yeah. They gorge. What advice would you give somebody that perhaps has an issue with that?
Yeah, so it's one of the main issues with intermittent fasting, right, is that it is a period of not eating. And you're breaking a lot of habits, right, because most of the way we eat is entrained. It's from habit. And so we're fighting against, you know, in some of us, 40, 50, 60 years of habit forming. And sometimes the repercussions of this period of fighting those habits is when you're done and you're upset that you haven't been eating at the times you want to eat and you haven't been eating the food you want to eat at those times, that we end up, like you said, gorging or eating too much. With Eat, Stop, Eat, and the way I prescribe intermittent fasting is they are occasional fasts. They are once or twice a week. And so the crux of the intermittent fasting style is that it's a 24-hour-ish fast, but divided between 2 days. So if you and I start fasting right now, we fast until this exact same time tomorrow. I don't care how many meals you skip or whatever. I just want that 24-hour chunk of not eating. When you're done fasting, what I want you to do is go back to eating exactly the way you would if you'd never fasted. So you pretend the fast never happened, right? So if you and I, it's around 2 o'clock my time, if we just finished fasting now, well, what I normally eat at 2, it'd probably be a snack, maybe a coffee. You know, I might try to get some protein in or something like that, but it wouldn't be dinner because dinner for me is later on when the kids are home, around 6 or 7. And that's the hard part for a lot of people is pretending the fast didn't happen. And the key to Eat, Stop, Eat is the flexibility that this style of fasting allows. And what I mean by that is that let's say you and I try fasting. And in a couple of weeks, we do a 2 p.m. to 2 p.m. fast twice a week. And every time we finish that 2 p.m. to 2 p.m. fast, you and I gorge. And we just can't help it. We're like, oh, I was just hungry. The first thing you do is try to alter your fast start and stop times. Because a lot of times that overeating is very time of day dependent. So maybe we push it and we do a 7 p.m. to 7 p.m. fast. And that's just a lot easier. Then we know that maybe a little snack, then you go to bed, you wake up, and you start eating the way you normally would. Or maybe it's earlier. Maybe for you and I, what would really work well is a noon to noon fast, because then you know, every day at noon you go to lunch with your team or work or something like that, and it just fits better. So the key, if the gorging is truly based on just habit, is to play with your start and stop times and find one that really works or gels with your lifestyle. The other issue with gorging a lot of people have is they're fasting, but they're not completely bought into the concept of fasting. So for 24 hours they're fasting, but they're worried that they're losing muscle or slowing their metabolism or becoming glycogen depleted or whatever, and that kind of food-based guilt is building up, and then when they're done the fast, they're trying to replenish, or they're using the idea of replenishment as an excuse to overeat. So to have really good results with fasting, you have to buy into the concept of fasting, the idea that you don't need all the hoopla of you know, specific nutrients, specific times, and specific cycles, etc. You're just taking a break from eating, and then you're going to start back up eating when you're done, and that's it. I find that the more you embrace that concept, the less likely you are to do kind of an after-fast gorge, because it's really not what I want. On the times in between fast, eat, stop, eat style, you should be eating to roughly maintenance, right? It should be a nice amount. You should be happy. You should not be trying to lose weight at those times per se as much as maintain the weight loss, that little bit of weight loss that happened after the 24 hours of fasting. So it takes a couple things to get rid of the gorging. It does take playing with the start and stop times. It also does take really addressing your mindset and why you're fasting the way you are and how you're approaching it.
Very cool. Great advice there. And one thing I want to add is you kind of mentioned this as far as, you know, you want to end your fast and pretend like as if nothing happened. You never did fast. What I did a couple times as well that worked well for me, and of course I translated that and told my clients about this, was to end your fast the same way every time. In other words, let's say it's 2 to 2 every time, no matter what, 2 o'clock, you have a cup of coffee or a handful of nuts or whatever it is, but do the same thing every time.
You
and
know
that way it's kind of automatic.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and that helps as well. I mean, we are creatures of habit, and so for a lot of people, you do need that understanding of what's coming after the fast. I've been in a situation where I don't really like going over 24 hours with fast. It's kind of my 24-ish is right about perfect for me. I don't really like anything higher. And so I forget where I was, but planes had been delayed, and I'd been on a tarmac, and I ended up breaking a fast in an airport, and I swear it was a major hub like Atlanta or something like that. And what do you do then, right? I don't want to fast any longer because I just don't like fasting that much longer. I don't think it's always the best idea. But I ended a fast in a place where I wouldn't normally be with foods I wouldn't normally eat, but I wanted to quit fasting. And I swear at that airport, your options are like, you know, it's either a Haagen-Dazs milkshake or Cinnabon, right? So, and when that happens, it's a bit stressful, right? It's very easy to break a fast the minute dinner's on the table, you made dinner for your family, you know exactly what you're eating, it's perfect, right? Or like you said, you're breaking a fast and you're just sitting down to a nice cup of coffee and a little snack, you knew exactly what you're eating. It can be a little stressful to break a fast and go, okay, what should I eat now? Like, what's available? Where am I? And that, I can see exactly, like you said, how that can actually be a form of stress that leads to a bit of overeating. So it is a good idea to have kind of a notion of what you're going to eat when the fast ends.
Very cool. And I know it's a very powerful too, especially once you embrace it and get used to it. And again, just like you said, you can adjust your times, try that for the first time, because it's very powerful. I've seen it, from several contest winners inside the Terminus Training membership site where they use Eat Stop Eat as the nutrition, of course, the Terminus Training workout. So it's a great 1-2 punch. And I think that really, in my opinion, the success behind it is the flexibility, because you're right. You can work it around your work schedule, work lunches, dinner with the family, whatever it is. It's really flexible, and I think that's why it's done so well.
Yeah, absolutely. The flexibility, I think, if you're to look at people who have had issues in the past with fasting, you can almost always break it down to when you look at if they were being flexible with it or not. And generally, it's the people who are having issues with fasting, for some reason they started fasting every day and then twice a week, 24 hours. And then, everything just became very regimented, and the regimen was based around not eating. Whereas if you keep the plan is around eating with the occasional break, that tends to be a lot more flexible and a lot more doable for most people, as opposed to the other approach that people get stuck into, which is you're fasting and occasionally taking a break to eat, right? So when you keep it based on eating, when you keep the understanding that eating's the goal, right? I want you to eat as much as possible and still lose weight, then the concept of moving your fast around isn't as difficult to understand, right? You can miss a fast or shift it or forward or backwards, et cetera, and that allows you for a lot more flexibility, and thus it fits into your life a lot better.
Sure thing. Absolutely. Very cool. Well, now it's shifted from intermittent fasting into the world of training. And
yep.
Have you discovered any new breakthroughs or trends that you see in the world of bodybuilding?
Well, yeah, I mean, bodybuilding is great because they're always sort of the cutting edge, and they're always inventing something or discovering something. Then it gets big and they shoot it down, right? They're very, very fickle, right, in terms of they always need something new to write about, right? So whatever was awesome last month is now horrible this month, right? It keeps the magazines flowing and whatnot. But they're great because when in doubt, they fall back on some very basic standard principles. And one of the principles I really like is that muscles grow specifically, right? So if you want a larger right bicep, you do exercises for your right bicep. And as funny as it sounds, I think that's just a core concept that we lose track of, which is the specificity of training. And if training is specific, if you can change the shape or size of certain muscles without greatly affecting the size of the other muscles in your body, then you do have complete control over manipulating the proportions of your body, right? So sometimes we forget that all it takes to really, really alter how you look is changing one or two things. And so everything doesn't need to get bigger, or everything doesn't need to get smaller. A great example for women, having a large or muscular behind or shapely shoulders, et cetera, a lot of that just simply depends on the size of your waist. Or, even better, the size of your waist or how your waist appears depends on the size of your legs and your butt and your shoulders, right? So you can really adjust the visuals of your body by targeting certain muscle groups and either training them more or training them less. And, you know, core concept of bodybuilding that we seem to constantly forget. And we like to just sort of look at our body, train it all equally, and then crapshoot which muscles respond better to training than others, and then we just sort of go, oh, well, that's just what happens, right? Whereas you do have the ability to target a muscle via the frequency, how often it's trained, the volume, the intensity. You know, each one of those things, people get that they can change the volume, that the frequency, the intensity of a workout. But what I think they forget is that you can do that for each individual muscle group, right? So, like, if your triceps are massive but your biceps are a bit small, you can lower the frequency, the volume, and the intensity of your tricep training, but at the same time increase all three of those things for your bicep training and try to alter those ratios, right? So a very core fundamental idea in bodybuilding that we tend to forget in everyday training, which is that, you know, we like to think of in a workout cycle or of an individual workout, but we can really target it right down to the individual workout of each specific muscle group and how we want that to shape our body. So that's one of the things I've just sort of, I guess, rediscovered because it hasn't gone anywhere, that bodybuilding really offers us is sort of that advanced knowledge, or I guess that simplicity of knowledge that, yeah, it's all specific, it's all targeted, and you can adjust your training to kind of match your goals.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Pretty cool stuff. Well, now that we're talking about bodybuilding, let's talk about home gym workouts. You know, some people like to work out at home. We got everything from TRXs to jungle gyms to kettlebells to just body weight. So when it does come to gym workouts, and for those that are listening that don't know it, I assume that you're still working out at home?
You know it, yep.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Very cool. Well, what would you say are the necessities when setting up a home gym?
Okay, so for me, necessity, well, first is space, right? I mean, you have just a little bit of space, then you've got the fundamentals. Floor space, I don't think you need much more than sort of maybe 6-7 feet by 3 or 4 feet. You sort of expand from there. Then it's ceiling height. You just need enough space that you could at least put your hands up in the air. From there, put your hand. No, anyway. From there, you have. I almost got caught there. Woo! You have access to almost all the bodyweight training that you want to do in the privacy of your own home. And you know the fundamentals of bodyweight training are just something appealing about it. You know, if I have a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old, it's impossible for me to do push-ups in the house with a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old without them wanting to join along. It looks interesting. It looks fun. Right, there's this sort of feeling that you're accomplishing something with just moving your body weight around. So that's your core. That of anything you need to do at workout at home, just some space and some know-how of how to move your body around that space to get a good workout. Expanding from there, I love my blast straps. And blast straps were kind of the predecessor of the TRX sort of straps. And they're really nothing more than some cord with some handles on the end. But just the amazing amount of exercises you can get done with those, two straps and some handles is phenomenal. So if I were to only have one thing in my house, it would be a pair of blast straps. And I'm just partial to the old school blast straps from Elite Fitness Systems over the other ones because it's what I started with. I know they're durable because I think I've had them for more than a decade, right? And then I've loaded them significantly. So I've used the blast straps to do a lot of weighted stuff as well. They're sturdy. They've been used outside, in the house, wrapped around a tree, wrapped around a goalpost. When you name it, they've done it. And they've stood this for the test of time. So that would be the core. Some space, somewhere to hang some blast straps or some TRX. Then from there, you're just adding weight in all the various forms. I played around with a weighted vest. I do have one somewhere in the house. I might have lent it out. And it was really fun. I've actually found that a simple thing is going to Home Depot and buying some chains. So not the big, thick, massive chains. Like, I have those too. But the biggest you could probably get at a Home Depot. I buy 7 feet of them. I buy a carabiner, one of those little clips. And then you can literally wrap them twice and wear them. So you kind of X them across your chest and back. And
sure.
It's just like a weight vest, a little more flexible just in terms of the things you can do, because you can also, you know, you can clip onto a handle, et cetera, use them for as the weight or adding weight to your own body. But, you know, you just need weight. So it can be chains, it can be dumbbells, it can be barbells, it can be kettlebells, whatever you find, the sandbags, right? Like, it's just some way to add weight. I like to say that a lot of the best movements that are out there are weighted body weight movements. So if you think of the squat, it's essentially a weighted body weight movement. Right, the same thing with a deadlift in a roundabout way.
Sure.
A weighted push-up, you know, if you want to sort of flip a bench press around. They all tend to be, your fundamental body weight movements with weight added. I mean, a weighted chin-up, you can't really beat that in terms of back development. So now you're dealing with the space, the blast strap or the TRX, you know, maybe a chin-up bar, and then various intensive weights. And then you just collect, right? I recently got my latest edition, which I think was a couple of years ago now, was a landmine. So you know they're a little universal joint you would actually stick a full bar into?
Yes.
And it's been phenomenal for the amount of things you can do with it in terms of anything from rows to various types of flies to a very, very comfortable feeling shoulder press where you're kind of pushing out and away from your body. Just lots you can do with it. There's lots of sort of ab and core exercises you can do, and it takes up very little space. So you just start with the core, and then you build up, and then, you know, if all of a sudden you've got some extra money kicking around, you put in the squat rack, and then, you know, maybe a little bit later on you invest in some heavier dumbbells, and then you just keep adding to it. But the key is the space, maybe a chin-up bar, blast strap TRXs, and then just various ways to add weight to the exercises. That's all you need.
Very cool. Really simple there, too.
Yeah.
Now,
and a radio. You need a radio.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Oh,
without
yeah.
a doubt.
I don't actually have a radio, but I do listen to I got the iTunes on the phone. And
I just realized I totally dated myself by saying radio. I may as well been like, you need a cassette player is what you need in there, a little boom box. So you need music is what I was trying to say. Yeah.
Absolutely. The boom box brings me back. Fantastic. Well, would you say there's any disadvantages as far as doing a home gym setup? Because I think sometimes for a lot of people, the workout room, and I'm saying that in air quotes, although you can't see me, ends up being a storage room. So,
yes.
Any advice to prevent something like that happening?
No, I guess it's just consistency of use, right? If everything is habit. So if you get into the habit of working out at home and you stay in the habit of working out at home and that equipment is being used, you're not going to hang your dress shirts on it, right? Because you're using it. So it's just remembering that this is an important part of your life, just as important as anything else is the workouts. You made the choice to work out at home, probably because of some lifestyle stuff. I mean, for me, it was when both kids were young and it felt horrible leaving the house. It took me about 15, 20 minutes to drive to the gym, 15, 20 to drive back. And I just kept thinking, that 15, 20 minutes could have either been tacked on to the workout, so it would be more effective, or I could have been using it for a lot of better things. Being as lazy as I am, I also realized that when you go to the gym, there's a certain amount of prep. You actually have to put some thought into what you're going to wear, right? Brush your teeth, do your hair, that kind of thing. Whereas when you're working out in the basement, you just go. If you're in your pajamas, it doesn't matter, right? You can just go down and start working out. And that's kind of what you just have to do, is remember it's there for a reason and then just continue to use it. I mean, for me, the only downfall of the home gym, and it's the reason I work out once a week at just finding a local gym and just giving it a go, is that there's no point of comparison in a home gym. So in a home gym, in your home gym mirror, you know the lighting and you know everything. You always kind of like, you're doing pretty good. So every once in a while, you need to go to a local gym, you know, with a bunch of 17, 18-year-old guys and girls there, just to be humbled a bit and realize, like, oh, okay, I got to keep pushing, right? Like, you need to remind yourself that, you know, young whippersnappers are always coming up at your heels trying to, you know, outdo you. So it just some motivation, right? Maybe some just seeing other people work out, maybe get some ideas of different styles of training. Maybe just remind yourself why you hate going to the gym so much and why you started working out at home in the first place. So every once in a while, it's good to kind of go in and check out a gym. But the most part, the key is consistency, as with everything, right? So if you're consistently using your gym at home, it's not going to turn into where you hang your, you know, your laundry. It's not going to turn into storage because you're going to need space because you're using it. So that's my best advice. As long as you consistently use it, then it'll consistently be a gym.
Exactly, and that's great advice. Very cool. Well, awesome stuff. Well, now, before we wrap it up, do you find any, are you reading any books that have made an impact on your approach with either nutrition or training?
Most of the stuff I'm reading right now is, like I said, based on the gut microbiota. So, unfortunately, if I'm not reading research on specifically the bacteria in the gut and health, I'm actually reading books on bacteria in general, trying to just kind of remind myself all the stuff we learned in university and in microbiology classes, et cetera. So that's kind of been what I've been doing for the last 6 or 7 months, is just sort of focusing on that. I do enjoy finance books and or business books because they tie in very well to the concept of weight loss and muscle gain, right? It is essentially the same thing, right? They're all forms of economics. They're in terms of what you're focusing on, what you're trying to accomplish, you know, things coming in, things going out. The similarities are always very striking to me. So I recently read, I'm hoping it, The One Thing, I think is the name of the book. Yes. And it was a really, really good book. It was a business book. But it also reminded me of the same thing in training, is that really you just have to focus on what is the one thing that's really important at this time in your training, right? So if you're trying to get a bigger legs, well, then your one thing in the gym is leg training, right? And if the other training tends to fall back a bit because you're focusing on leg training, that's okay because you're focusing on leg training. So it was kind of a reminder of not to try to do everything at once, not to try to get too caught up in the idea of multitasking, but allowing yourself to focus on what's the one thing that's most important. And so I thought from a business point of view, it made a lot of sense. For me, the one thing to make sure the success in my business is putting pen to paper. I'm an author, so writing is what I should be doing, right? Not fiddling around with website graphics or fiddling around with blogs or trying to find the right picture to go with a blog. No, my one thing is writing, right? So from a business point of view, writing. From a training point of view, my one thing will always be lifting weights, right? The cardio is definitely not my one thing. Training for, you know, sport-specific success. I'm 37. I don't play sports anymore, not in a way that's ever going to make me money or make me famous. So that's not really a goal either. But I know that not only is weight training, because it's changing the shape of the muscles where I want them to be changed as goals, but if I also remember that I'm really just trying to focus in on one thing, it makes it very easy for me to go, okay, for the next 3 months, legs is my focus. They're going to get more frequency, more volume, more intensity than any of the other muscle groups. I'm going to pull back on the amount of training in those areas because my one thing right now, legs, right, or calves, or arms, or shoulders, or chest, or back, whatever the case may be, but it allows you to remember to focus. So business books and finance books, you can really take some of their kernels of knowledge and apply it into nutrition. But other than that, yeah, it's microbiology for me right now. Yay.
Very cool. Well, we appreciate you sacrificing the learning curve and then letting filling us in.
And of course, fun times right now.
Yeah, I bet. Now we really do look forward to having you at the TT Summit and having you there and sharing your knowledge and really interested in that training approach. So pretty excited about that. Now, where can people find you on the internet?
Matt, you know, best spots for sort of my random ramblings and brain spills is my blog. And that's just bradpilon.com. Right? So you'll find me sort of thinking my way through problems. It'll be there. For day-to-day interaction, I actually really like Twitter, and I'm on there quite frequently. I find that it always surprises me when you only have 140 characters just how witty people can be. So I'm on Twitter quite a lot. And I'm on Facebook, too. Facebook's kind of where I go to, you know, just sort of check in, see how everybody's doing, answer a couple questions sort of thing. So Facebook, Twitter, my blog, those are the best spots to actually reach me. If you're interested in, you know, some of my writing, obviously eatstopeat.com is kind of my go-to resource. And that's about it. I mean, you search those four things, and then you'll probably find me or at least something I've written.
Fantastic. And definitely give Brad a follow there. I've always enjoyed your approach. Of course, your Eat Stop Eat has been a great tool for not only myself and, of course, for my clients as well. And we certainly look forward to seeing you at the TT Summit, man.
Oh, it's going to be great. As long as it's warm, I'm happy.
Absolutely. It should be. It's going to be San Diego. It's 71 and sunny every day pretty much.
Love it. Beautiful.
Awesome. Well, really cool. And everyone listening on the call, hopefully you got some great nuggets there, some fantastic information. And, of course, we will have another fantastic fat loss call next month. And, again, from Brad Pilon and myself, Mike Whitfield, TurbulenceTraining.com, we will talk to you next month. Bye-bye.